Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a special occasion. I have to address two chairpersons and distinguished delegates, learned speakers who have joined us this morning for this thematic debate. Good morning to you all. Mr. Chairman, you mentioned that for the past few years there have been several requests to find a synergy between EFAP and IPDC. And it is very befitting that we found that synergy in the form of this thematic debate today, when we are marking the 25th anniversary of IPDC. Of course, EFAP is a relatively newer council. On several occasions, people have asked what are the unique features of these two councils. I think these discussions, I'm sure the colleagues will interact with the members of the two councils and perhaps in social conversations. But let me try and really very briefly mention the very unique features of the two. Not only the mandate of the two councils are quite different. For example, the IPDC concentrates largely on media development of independent pluralistic media. The emphasis is on freedom of expression, development of community media, training of media professionals. That is the accent of the IPDC. Whereas the priority areas for EFAP are mainly information literacy, preservation of information, and the legal, social, and cultural dimensions of information and knowledge societies. Now, you can see that the two vary in terms of mandate, in terms of approaches, and also, of course, the way they conduct business. IPDC mainly focuses on developments of projects that emanate from the field, and we fund them sometimes very small amounts, but that go very far. EFAP has also of late, only I think this is a relatively recent phenomena when it has funded some projects, but the number of projects, the resources available to it, and the area of concentration are entirely different. Now, having said that, it is only in fitness of things that we must find common grounds between the two councils, because if the distinction was primarily on the basis of new information and communication technologies and traditional communication technologies, that would not hold a very valid ground today. Simply because of the convergence between communication and information technologies, you don't have the media, the days when we talked about the text, the printed text, the radio broadcasting, the television broadcasting, and of course the new phenomena, internet and World Wide Web. So the distinction is, of course, because information society division deals primarily with new technologies, whereas traditionally the communication division within the sector has dealt with a traditional media of radio, television, and press. Because of those specializations, of course, the two divisions continue to work in their specialized areas. But because of the convergence within communication information technology, the distinction primarily based on traditional media and new media is not really a very valid one anymore. Therefore, this thematic debate for the first time between the members of the two councils is really a beginning of that recognition of the convergence between communication information technologies. And I think it is this debate, hopefully, will help sharpen our thinking in terms of how the strengths, the specializations, the constituencies that the two councils address can bring value added to our work. So that is basically the purpose of this thematic debate. And the topic that you have chosen for this thematic debate is particularly very, very relevant, coming more or less immediately after the World Summit on the Information Society. Now, it is the community voice from community radio to blogging, essentially saying how we have moved from some very conventional methods of reaching communities to some of the most modern ones. Let me try to, my job this morning, I believe, is to contextualize the theme. And then, of course, the speakers will reflect more deeply on the subjects that they are going to address. As I mentioned both in my opening remarks at the EFAP Council as well as the IPDC Council, in the debates at the World Summit on the Information Society, UNESCO found a niche and advanced the notion of knowledge societies. And that was not simply to make a distinction between the mandate of ITU, which was the lead agency for the World Summit on the Information Society, and the mandate of UNESCO. It was recognition of the fact that knowledge today has emerged as the primary engine of development. If you look, for example, at the main features of an agricultural society, land was the primary factor of production in agriculture era, followed by labor, followed by some capital to buy new seeds, fertilizers, and equipment, farm equipment. When we moved to the industrial society, capital became the primary factor of production, followed by skilled labor. You also needed some land to set up your factories. Now that we have entered what is called knowledge societies, some people refer it to as information society, and that's where I think we tend to differ, and I will explain why. Knowledge has become the primary factor of production. Knowledge has become the central force for economic growth. Knowledge has become the primary mover of social transformation, of cultural enrichment and political empowerment. So to the extent that you enable people to access information and knowledge, that is going to be the primary determinant of development in future. And that's why, now, if you look, for example, the notion of development itself has really undergone a major change. At some point, they say 25, 30 years ago, people looked at the GDP and GNP as the primary measure of development. Then they say, well, GDP and GNP, while important, if you do not ensure social justice, it is no development, it's lopsided development. Then came the notion of that unless you involve people, unless people participate in the development process, unless the societies become democratic societies where the decision is collective decision, it is not development. So the notion of development progressively has changed. And let me just quote a recent definition of development by UNDP. It says, development is about advocating for change and connecting communities to knowledge, experience and resources to help build a better life. The emphasis here is on people, not on the process of development, but the development is about people. It is about empowerment of people. It's not giving someone just simply resources, it is enabling them to develop their own resources, to utilize those resources, and to make a change in their own life, be responsible for their own lives. Now, if you look at the most dominant factor, the most dominant feature, rather, of our times today, what is the most dominant feature? I would personally think, I mean, of course, you ask 10 different persons, they will probably give 10 different answers, and that would be correct too. But my view is that the most dominant feature of today is the nature and speed of change. It is mind-boggling how things are changing and how things are changing so rapidly. is really causing that change, the nature of change and the speed of change? It is the advancement in science and technology. If you plot the development of societies on a graph, this graph of at least the economic activities of humankind ever since we were created, the graph would be quite flat until late 16th century. It is around the second half of the 16th century is when the graph begins to go like this. What explains that? What explains that primarily is that is when people began to invest in knowledge. They began to create knowledge. They began to utilize knowledge. So if you look at the radical changes that have occurred in the last, say, 4 or 5 centuries, it is the creation of knowledge, it is the preservation of knowledge, it is the dissemination of knowledge, and it is the utilization of knowledge that has brought about the changes that we witness today in our societies. That is what. Now, if you look at the speed of change, what has triggered that speed? What has brought that speed about? When I was a student in the United States in, say, now I have to say that, think about it, when was it? Many, many years ago, more than 3 decades ago, let's put it that way. At that time, I was able to make, I think in 3 years, 2 telephone calls. Telephone calls were not easy, and telephone calls were expensive for a student, for a graduate student, who lived on just a fellowship. Now, the difference is that I can talk to my village, which is a very remote village on the Indo-Nepal border, does not have regular electricity supply. I can talk to because there are mobile phones that people have. They do not have the landline. There are only two landline connections, and often they don't work. But people do have mobile phones. That is the speed of change that you have witnessed. You know, in a remote village, and today India boasts of being, the fastest market for mobile phones in the world today. So what has really caused the speed of change? It is the information and communication technology, and therefore it is very relevant that we are discussing about the voice to communities and through different means of communication and information technologies. Now, why community access? That is a question. In the year 2000, the world leaders gathered together in New York, and they decided, or they set out to achieve 8 development goals. Let me just recall a few of them so that if I can find it. Anyway, I think achieving universal primary education is one of them. Gender equity is second. HIV, AIDS. There are 7, 8 of those objectives. Now, if you do a proper analysis of how these Millennium Development Goals can be achieved, the common denominator in all of them is sharing of knowledge, because you cannot even conceive of achieving universal primary education without having trained teachers, without having textbooks, without having other means of teaching and learning. Let's take one example. We talk a great deal about in this house, UNESCO house. In education for all is our principal priority area. Can we think of making even a small dent in that area without having trained teachers? It is estimated roughly there are 40 million untrained teachers as we speak. Can you train 40 million teachers using conventional methods of training? Can you really? And yet there are any number of examples where you can take teacher training to people wherever they may be. You cannot close down schools and colleges to train these 40 million teachers. Then you will have to close them down for quite a significant period of time. Now, if that is the case, you have to use and harness the potential of communication information technologies. That is why it is important to remember that if you have to achieve the Millennium Development Goals, you have to harness the potential. The world is, there are any number of examples where the major challenges in the world have been addressed and solved primarily by innovations in science and technology. And fortunately for our societies today, we do have the enormous resources in the form of communication information technology to address issues such as teacher training and quality education for all, and so on and so forth. Now, I started by saying, why then communities? If you look at, again, those eight Millennium Development Goals, who are the target groups of those Millennium Development Goals? These are the people who are most marginalized. They are poor. And if you do further analysis, these are the people, especially women and girls, living in remote rural communities. Unlike you and me, who may have more than one mobile telephone, maybe an iPod, have access to maybe not one television set, maybe two televisions, certainly more than one radio, one in our car, one maybe in the bedroom, another one in the living room, the third one with the studio, and so on and so forth. These people, believe it or not, they still have difficulty being able to afford battery for their transistors. We believe that everybody today has access to television because our vision is colored by where we are and who we are and what we see. But a large percentage of the world population today still does not have television, access to television, what to talk of the internet and World Wide Web. So to them, the access to information and knowledge will continue to be through community access. Just let's reflect. It took the world 38 years to reach 50 million people through radio. 38 years for the first 50 million people. It took 13 years for television to reach 50 million people. It took only 4 years for internet to reach 50 million people. So again, I'm going back to the speed of change and how these technologies have developed. But if the large percentage of the population whose life you want to change, you want to enable them to have access to information and knowledge, if they do not have access to these powerful tools, then what good are these technologies for them? That's why, if they cannot afford, and frankly, if you go to remote rural areas anywhere in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, anywhere, you find that people is still in some, even in poor in urban communities, may have an antenna dish looking for for television programs for anywhere. But in remote rural areas, you still have serious problems of accessing information. Perhaps radio is still the major means of communication for them. And word of mouth. Still the information from your neighbor, from your colleagues, from teachers, from students going to schools, that is the primary source of their information. And therefore, if we really want to make an impact, or if we want to enable people to change their lives and to participate in the development process, access has to be through the communities. When radio came into existence, in most countries, even countries like Australia, they used radio for farm school on the air. because of a very wide dispersed population, very thin population. Australia was one of the first few countries to use radio for taking education to even school children. In my own country, Radio Rural Forum, again, UNESCO was responsible for launching that program in 1959 in India. There were hundreds of thousands of small rural radio forums at that time. When television appeared, there were teleclubs in school buildings, in community centers. The access to television for a larger segment of the population was primarily through community. The new technologies have to go through the same route. It is highly unlikely, even though there are many favorable factors to which I will come a little later, but for those who are the target groups of the Millennium Development Goals, community access to Internet and World Wide Web is perhaps the only answer for quite some time. Now, if that is the case, it is important for us not only to conceive innovative ways of establishing those community centers, but also selecting appropriate technologies that are robust, that are rugged, that are portable, that have higher capacities, and so on and so forth. And that is what UNESCO has done in the last several years. One of our program areas, community multimedia centers. We have different names, different sectors call them differently. Some of them are community learning centers, the others are called community multimedia centers, others call them telecenters, and there are any number of names. But I don't think that makes a difference as long as you are enabling the communities, the people, with the power of information and knowledge so that they will participate in their own development process. Now, that's why I think the selection of today's topic, the thematic debate today on community voices from community radio to blogging. If I said I will come back to on development of technology. If you look at, you know, actually the advances in communication technologies are extremely favorable to the use of these technologies for community access. A television set, say 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, cost a lot of money. A computer, the cost of computer today, you know, so the cost is certainly one factor. But what are other developments? With the advances, now the technology is becoming highly portable. You know, you carry, you know, all of us carry this little device, and it's becoming smaller and smaller now. Samsung has come out with one that's like a card, like a bank card almost, that I read in Newsweek that came out last week. So the technology is becoming more portable, smaller. It is becoming a lot more rugged. It is, and the cost with every advancement, the cost of the technology is coming down rapidly. And therefore, it is possible now to use a small sum of money. That's why the IPDC project, small projects, would make a huge difference in the lives of people. That if we are able to harness the advances in technology, the enhanced capacity of technologies to carry information, and to carry that information with a speed that is now truly mind-boggling. But that alone is not, that might be important, certainly is a necessary condition, but not a sufficient condition really. Simply to have access to information is not going to be the major determinants of community voice. Because to really involve the community to participate in its development and to share knowledge and information, community has to be empowered with ability to develop its own content. Because, you know, we have always complained about information flowing in one direction. And if the technologies, new technologies, allow you to do exactly that, that is, the information is still flowing from urban centers to rural centers, from major rural centers from markets to the consumers and so on and so forth, you're still not really empowering people with their ability to create and use knowledge. You have to empower them to create knowledge which is relevant to their needs, which gives expression to their concerns, which empowers them to participate politically in the decision-making process. So it is a question of capacity building. Now, that capacity building, you cannot create that unless you really empower them with information literacy. And again, I'm not talking of information literacy as a computer literacy. These are not necessarily the same concepts. You know, you have to empower them, give them the ability to look at information, to find that information, to analyze that information, to apply that information in their own context. That is what empowerment really means. And that is why it is important to have to reflect on how do you really reach the people who have hitherto remained more or less, frankly, on one hand you see mind-boggling developments all over the world, on one hand people are living the kind of lives that you are not healthy to have those resources and to utilize the kind of resources that we spend on day-to-day living. On the other hand, you have a very large segment of the population that is neglected, that has no access to information and knowledge, that is deprived. If we cannot, Secretary General Kofi Annan once said that if you continue to develop a gap between the have and have-nots, today that gap is primarily in the form of knowledge divide, although some people refer it to as digital divide. I do not believe, frankly, digital is just a technology. It's a kind of technology. It's a knowledge divide, and that is the notion that what UNESCO has been advocating. I wish your deliberations all success. I'm sure that these speakers will contribute in their own specialized areas of intervention, and I look forward to a very lively debate. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr.